Toss to White. He's in! Patriots win the Super Bowl!
Hi there and welcome back to the Temple Carrick Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Stewart. I'm joined here today by Jack and Luke, and today we have a special guest of Mr. Wallace.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Today we're going to be talking about American sports. Haven't touched off this topic yet, so going to be good.
And most of us do not know about this topic apart from Mr. Wallace, so...
I'm too into it, Jack, you might say.
All right.
Yeah, got into NFL 15 years ago. It's just something a friend of mine was into. Then I went to America, got some of the merchandise, saw some college training sessions, and I was just hooked ever since. Now, what do you guys know about NFL?
Patriots have won. That's like most of my knowledge is Patriots are like top team, and they've been winning. And like any team that Tom Brady goes to, they win.
Yeah. And so then Patriots won 6 over his lifespan with the Patriots, and then he went to the Buccaneers and he won again. Which no one expected him to do, to be fair. Like, they were a good team, the Buccaneers. They had a good coach. But once he went, they just elevated. And yeah, they won last year, which was... I don't know about you guys. I don't like people who are really, really, really good at sport.
No, you have to.
I think it's
you
unfair.
Yeah. It's like, you know, Schumacher in F1. It was like someone like Ronaldo in football. But you don't want to like them, but you kind of have to respect them as well.
It's got to have one or two, though, in every sport, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
But he's undisputed. He is the greatest of all time. Like, I don't even know, like, a lot about NFL, but I know he is the greatest of all time.
I know. And, there's been times, like, he's won some of his Super Bowls by literally, like, last kick of the game, and he didn't kick it. Another guy, Vinatieri, actually got 2 of his kicks for 2 of his Super Bowls. But there's times where you're kind of like, oh, he's just lucky. And then he goes to another team and does it, and you're like, right, it's not just him.
Yeah.
You know, or it is a lot down to him. But he had a great team around him as well. What teams do you know about? I want to hear what you guys know first, and then I'm going to tell you a bit about it.
I know a bit about the 49ers. My older brother supports them, so...
Cool.
Was it the San Francisco 49ers?
They're 49ers, yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah. And is that Patrick Mahomes?
No, Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City Chiefs.
Kansas City, yeah, okay. They're the...
And that's probably the thing. So, like, look, NFL was massive, huge, and they even set up a European league back in the early 2000s. But then it got disbanded and people kind of fell out of love with it because it's way too long. Like, it is way too long. It's 4.5 hours for a game, loads of stoppages. They even stop for ad breaks and all the rest. So that's what put people off. But it's kind of becoming cool again because you have the likes of Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, like these cool, young, athletic, often black quarterbacks, which wasn't always the case, coming into the league and being really exciting and really dynamic and really cool on Instagram and all the rest. And that's kind of made the league grow a little bit more. It's massive in the UK. It is huge. They're coming over for 2 London games this year. And there's guys, the Around the NFL podcast, they come over and they do a show. They've sold out 4 shows in a row. That's how popular it is in huge arenas. So, like, people are definitely getting more into it. Things like NFL Red Zone on Sky Sports, you just watch the touchdowns. So the Red Zone's like 20 yards in. So literally, that's all you watch. And that is the perfect way for someone to get into it because it's skillful. Like, it's so incredible. Do any of you remember the Odell Beckham catch?
Yeah, like, some of the talent they have. Like, especially quarterbacks. Like, you don't think it's too hard until you have one yourself.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah. You try to throw a spiral even 20 yards. It is hard.
And with that accuracy as well.
I know. And so, but, like, that's the thing. Like, there's times where they drop it. And, like, a lot of you lads have played rugby or Gaelic or whatever else. There's times where they drop and you're like, why can't they catch the ball? But, like, the thing is coming at them at 90 miles an hour. It is being absolutely zipped at them. So, like, it is an incredibly skillful sport. I like that it's stop-start. I like that it's kind of like 15 seconds of intense energy, real tactical. It's all, like, one-on-one matchups. It's all movements and lines. It's like you run a backs play in rugby.
That's my favorite part about rugby. So that's, like, when it comes to, like, towards the end, I'd always watch, like, this. I'd watch the Super Bowl just because it's, like, the Super Bowl. But, like, last year I watched a couple bit more because I watched that thing on Netflix was Last Chance U.
Yeah.
The bad thing about that is, like, half of them are in jail.
Yes.
All of them are in jail.
But like, there's some statistic, like, even the kids who go to college, like, 0.03% of them make it to the NFL.
Yeah.
And even, like, the best guys turn up in the NFL, they could be gone after a year. Like, if you're not the best, it's very hard to make money. It's very hard to make a living out of it. But, yeah, they all come through. Things like Last Chance U, but even, like, this is the bit I love about NFL. I love American culture generally. But, like, Friday Night Lights, you know, Remember the Titans, all these movies that are about American football that we all know about. You know, we see it so often in TV. Then you throw in things like Last Chance U. There's one on Amazon Prime. There's one on Sky as well. It's all behind the scenes. NFL films run them. And you get to see how these organizations run. But, like, you know, you're talking about, like, a backs play.
Yeah.
How many backs plays do you have in rugby?
We'd have probably five or six.
Yeah. And so you're talking, you have something like, just on the offensive side, 200 variations of moves, just moves. And that's what I love about it. Like, it is so tactical. Here's a good one for you. England did well in the World Cup 2 years ago.
Yes.
Last year?
It was...
Yeah, 2 years ago.
Yeah?
Was it?
Yeah, when they got to the...
And they lost Croatia.
Yes.
I know, three years ago.
Yeah, so their set-piece coordinator was an NFL coordinator. And he actually, like, from corners and from free kicks, he put in place, you know, you're going to run here, you're going to run here, you're going to kind of dummy here and bring these players with you. They scored goals at set-pieces. I think Harry Maguire had, like, four headers in that competition or something. And no one had really seen that before. Like, I don't play football, but again, for someone who plays football, I assume it's normally just stick your hand up and hoof it into the box.
Whoever gets it, gets it, pretty much.
Yeah, kind of. So, like, they actually put a bit of structure on it. And like I said, that's what I love. I was a rugby coach. I'm not doing it at the moment. But, like, I just love how structured it is. And then the bit I love on top of it is that it is just so American. It is. So loud and
even
so
the ads and everything, like
what's the thing, you know, when like before games and all the supporters in like the car parks and
tailgating.
I find that so funny, and they're all like sat in barbecues, like
you see them jumping onto tables and stuff.
that's the Bills Mafia from Buffalo. They're mad for it, but like it is, you know, the way of, I don't know, you'd support United or you'd support Greystones United even or something like that. Absolute passion that is built into them. If you're from that city, that is your team. It's everything. And actually, one of the teams, Green Bay, is owned by the city. The members own it. The only way you can become a season ticket holder is if the person who owns the ticket is related to you and dies. It's the only way you can get tickets. Yeah, it's intense. Now, most of them are owned by super rich billionaires. Hey, that's just life. That's business, because it is a multi-billion organization. That's what it has over rugby at times as well. Like, it just has so much money. It's the same with basketball and same with baseball. Huge money. But just huge energy. Like, we all know who LeBron James is. We all know who Michael Jordan is. Like, I'm sure loads of you watched that Save the Last Dance documentary.
Yeah,
it's class. That's the most I've watched about basketball, probably. But it's so interesting and, like, such an intense environment compared to maybe what we're used to around that.
But another thing about American sports culture is college. College is so big in America, which I find so interesting, that they're set. Like, I went to Ohio, and I had Ohio State merch. And my dad went to one of their games, and it was like a packed stadium, like 70,000 people, which is as big as Old Trafford, just for one college game. And it's just mad how, like, even the not highest tier of sport is still
huge. I think Michigan University have 120,000 seater stadiums.
Like, that's mad. You go down to, like, even tomorrow we're playing a rugby game, we'll go down, won't even probably be near 100 supporters, let's say. Like,
but when you're playing with a crowd, it feels like, when you're not playing with a crowd, it feels like it feels normal. But then even there's like 50 people there, totally it's like the atmosphere.
Feels amazing. For any sport as well, you know, whether it's football, Gaelic, like, you have a bit of a crowd there. There's a high school in Texas, so your age playing American football, and they have a 75,000-seater stadium.
That's just mad.
Eastlake? I think it's Eastlake High School. And they, you know, they go and play there, like you lads would play in Donnybrook or whatever, or you play in Croker. Yeah. You know, it's a big moment, but you're not filling out the stadium. They go and play in Arlington in Texas, which is the Cowboys stadium. They fill out the stadium. Like, you're talking a 90,000-seater stadium with, like, huge screens, professional locker rooms and all the rest. And, like, you're a kid. That's how into that sport they are. And, like, you're right about colleges. It's such an interesting setup that they go to college, they do kind of 3-4 years. Some of them go out early, but they do 3-4 years. And then they go into the NFL, and, like, they know that's their career path. They go to college, and I'm doing inverted ears here on in the podcast suite. But, like, they go and they just do the bare amount, most of them, to get by. Yeah. They're all about sport. That's what they're there for. It's actually quite an interesting one as well. You used to not be able to make money as a college athlete. It was always a big issue. Like, you cannot make money, you can't be paid, you can't market yourself, you can't do anything like that. But they brought it in this year that you can do a name, image, likeness, NIL deals. So basically people can use your name to promote products. And actually a kid who's only 17 had a year and a half left in high school, left high school early to go to college because he wants to profit on it. And like they think he's going to be the next big quarterback, but they're literally kind of going, right, now we can make money, let's go to college. And then we can go into the NFL from there.
That would have been really risky, though, before they brought in the pay, because if whatever happens, you get injured or you just don't make it in your sport, you know.
And I suppose that's kind of like, so watching some of those shows, Hard Knocks is one of them, and you kind of see the emotion where like a lad kind of realizes it's not just that they're not going to play their sport anymore, that's their career.
Yeah.
You know, they probably don't have the college backup. Now, there's some guys who've come in and they've like completed law degrees, architect degrees. They're smart guys. There's no doubt about it. But some of them come in and it's just not enough. But you have that, like you're saying about the college system. They have it for baseball, basketball, and the American football as well. And like it's pretty cool that you know you can go to college, but that's actually the starting block for becoming a professional athlete. Like I think Leinster Academy have probably tried to do the same for rugby here.
Yeah, but like over in the States, it's all the same. Like, that's how you get scouted, or that's how you make any of the big teams. College, that's how they pick you.
And high school is even high school is so marketable.
Yeah.
Like, there's kids like Mikey Williams for basketball.
Yeah.
He's, like, millions of followers on Instagram, and he's, like, still in high. Like, I think he's either still in high school or going.
There's a lot of those guys who've made more from Instagram and TikTok than they have. There's a guy destroying. He's a kicker, and he went to college, but did some YouTube clips, made a bit of money. They kicked him out of college.
Because of it,
yeah. So he couldn't stay in college. And like they say, the whole name, image, likeness thing is a big part because of him, because he has so many followers. But like he's still trying to get in the team. You know, he's good enough. He is genuinely a good enough kicker. But there comes a responsibility then with all that TikTok stuff. There's a guy, Juju Smith-Schuster. And like he's,
I know him, yeah.
Doing dances in the end zone.
Dances in the end zone, dances on the center part where their logos are. But he's TikTok. He has his own sports gaming team. There's another one, just to randomly go off on a tangent. All the colleges now have esports gaming teams. Like, that is huge industry. Barcelona have one, Lakers have one, Munster Rugby have one.
It's getting really popular now, yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's mad. But like, I think that's what I love. I love all those kind of sports where it's just like massively intense. We're passing on in time here. What do you know about, do you know any of the other teams, baseball, basketball? I've talked about NFL, I love them.
Basketball, a good bit. But like, what's it called? Lakers, obviously, Bulls.
Yeah.
Utah Jazz, Minnesota.
It's kind of any of the teams that have big names, you know.
Yeah. Like Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah.
Do you think you know more about those sports though now? Like, do you think you know more about the sports because you see them on social media? Like, or you see them in movies and all the rest?
Like, even on, like, TikTok or anything, you'll see the amount of basketball clips you get, like, dunks, three-pointers, anything. And it just kind of, every time you see it, you start to remember the names. You start to, like, recognize their jersey, you know, who they're playing for.
I think that's the thing, like, kids in the 90s, everyone would have known who Michael Jordan was, even if he'd never touched a basketball. Yeah. I think everyone knows who LeBron James is, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, all the rest.
Kobe or any of them, like,
Oh, absolutely. Like, and, like, that was the thing, when Kobe died, it was such an outpouring of grief, and you kind of went, oh, like, he meant a lot to people.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't just some dude. He meant so much to people so clearly. Baseball, I know less about. I've played games on the PlayStation with it, I'll be honest. But like, again, it's still such a big sport. The thing I struggle with baseball is it's long and it's slow. Because it's literally like step up, pitch, hit.
Yeah, I've never really understood it. There's a lot of waiting in between everything as well. Like. Yeah. It could be you go out on your third or you hit on your second strike. That could happen for the next, like, three batters. So it's all very slow.
They don't look like athletes. Like, when I look at them, some of them have beer bellies. It's just odd that you can be getting paid so much for a sport and you don't even look fit.
Hey, but look at darts players and stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's true,
But darts players, to be fair, have been sitting in a pub practicing their whole life. Yeah. So it's not...
It's funny, like, now some of them are absolute units and they can obviously, they're the boys hitting the big home runs. We were talking about a guy earlier, Shohei Ohtani. He's from Japan. He was a pitcher, went through the college systems in Japan. Actually, Japan's quite big for baseball.
Really?
Yeah. You
wouldn't think it.
They won the Olympic gold medal. They beat the US. But they have a lot of players that get drafted in places like Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Cuba are quite big for baseball as well. They have a lot of players come up. But he came in, he's a pitcher, but he's also hit the most home runs this year. And, like, that's kind of unheard of, doing both those things.
Isn't that your man Babe Ruth, the other guy to do
it? Oh, I remember him.
Yeah. So, but, like, again, you know some of these names. You probably know, like, Derek Jeter.
Yeah.
You know, some of these names kind of permeate through culture and film. And, like, my first place hearing about baseball was The Simpsons.
Mine was the...
like Daryl Strawberry and all these kind of famous names from back in the day.
I really enjoyed the movie The Sadler Kids.
Yeah, it's class.
Great movies.
Some of the, they translate more to the American market, but we've all seen those kind of American sports films and TV shows, and they're fun, they're cool.
But, like, that's where you get a lot of your education for any sports. Like, I wouldn't know much about any of the American sports, but I could talk about any one of them just from social media, TikTok or movies really.
Exactly. You'll always have a little bit of knowledge, and I think that's, again, what we enjoy. Like, we're also used to football, rugby, Gaelic. Like, that's our existence.
Yeah.
But then you see this sport that is just, like, fireworks and Lady Gaga jumping off the top of a stadium, and you're just like, yeah, get in.
Gets you pumped up, yeah.
And the only negative, if you catch me on a Monday after Super Bowl Sunday, I'm an absolute briar. Like, I've been up till 6 a.m., but I wouldn't change it. I love watching it. I love how intense it can get. Like, I woke up, I had a 3 years ago, there was a playoff game. New Orleans Saints are my team. And there was a playoff game where literally with the final play of the game, the Minnesota Vikings threw an absolute Hail Mary, just nothing throw, wasn't going anywhere. And the defender, like, dipped his head, missed the Vikings player who caught it, and he ran in. It was called a miracle in Minneapolis. And, like, I screamed at the TV in the same way that, like, when Stuart misses a goal in FIFA, like, he throws his controller at the wall or something. And I suppose it was that moment where I kind of went, oh, I'm really into this. Oh, no, you know.
Breaking up your whole house.
Oh, I had, like, a two-year-old daughter absolutely roaring. But it kind of lets you know that, like, that feeling, and you do get it sometimes, that feeling in sport where you're just, your heart's going as well. I actually felt it. This is a weird one. I was watching the US Open. Don't really watch tennis. But the young British girl who won, I was on the edge of my seat. I was like, this is incredible. Like, not only is she young, but she's British. They haven't won it in so many years and whatever else. And, like, I was literally on the edge of my seat watching this.
It happens without you even knowing, though. Like, before you know it, like, you're just...
Watch F1, but sometimes when I'm, like, watching it and, like, Hamilton's, like...
Yeah.
When Hamilton and Verstappen start going at it, I just, like, sort of, like, edge forward.
And
like,
And you feel your heart go a little bit and you feel your head go a little bit and you're like, oh, my God, I'm really into this. You don't know where it comes from. And that's what I've always felt with American sports. And it just kind of, there's something about it, the energy, the intensity, it just brings it all together. So it's brilliant. Watch more of it, people, okay?
Well, I think that's it for today. Thanks very much for coming in, Mr. Wallace. It's been a pleasure having you.
Absolute pleasure. So nice to talk to you all.
Well, thanks, guys. We'll see you next time.
Hello, and welcome to the Controversial Corner. I'm here with Megan and Hannah. Unfortunately, Nola will not be joining us today due to situations outside of our control. Today, we'll be talking about spirituality and morality and stuff like that. All right, so Hannah, do you want to start us off with the afterlife?
Absolutely. A very formal introduction there, Carol. I love it. So I think mainly for when we're talking about afterlife, we were discussing kind of the aspect of reincarnation and how interesting that was. And myself and Nola especially, we're kind of talking about how, you know, some people view it as something very kind of a moral aspect of their lives, whether they kind of believe that you come back as something or that maybe when you kind of die, you go on to a next life and there isn't just one life. Whereas kind of other people view it as, you know, you die and that's it. Stone cold brown bread. And you're just, that's it. You're just dead and everything goes black. So I suppose we all kind of had slightly different opinions. Megan, I know you had a different opinion.
Yeah. Because we were just talking about like what we all thought would happen after we die. And I was kind of just saying, I think we just die. And then we're dead. Like, you know, you're born, you live, you die.
Yeah. I think there's... There's really interesting because I suppose it kind of ties in with your religion as well. I think whether, not always, obviously, but sometimes it can tie in. I know some religions kind of reincarnation is something that they very strongly believe in. whereas other religions wouldn't necessarily be introduced to them. I definitely think, in my view, like I don't know if I'm going to come back as a leaf, or maybe I'll just come back in spirit or something, or my soul will come back. But what do you think, Aaron?
Well, personally, I like to think that there isn't necessarily you come back, but there's actually an afterlife, a place you go afterwards.
Yeah.
Somewhere nice, somewhere good, where you meet all the ones you lost in life and where you get almost a second chance.
I love that idea. And yeah. Is it more of a like heaven or hell kind of concept you believe in, or?
I actually don't like to believe in the idea of hell. I like to believe the idea that you could be, that you become redeemed within the afterlife.
Yeah.
That you get that time in order to redeem yourself from the, for lack of a better term, sins you committed within your life.
Yeah.
Out of curiosity, when you're in that afterlife per se, are you there for eternity then, or is there something after that, do you think?
I'd like to think that you have an idea, like you say, you just end, but that it's your choice as to when you end.
In the afterlife, you can be like, okay, I've done what I needed to do, and I'm okay to leave now, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's really interesting. Yeah, that's really cool. So you kind of think once you're kind of, is there a purpose? Because I know as well some people believe in that there's kind of, you nearly have like a purpose in life. And once you fulfill that purpose, then you move on. Do you believe in that kind of thing, or?
I don't necessarily believe in life. Everyone has a purpose. I believe that it is our job to find what our purpose is.
Okay, so self-made purpose.
Yeah, but I like to believe in the afterlife that we do have a reason to be there.
Absolutely. I think that's really good. The next thing we talked about and found really interesting was maybe the whole concept of soulmates. And what do you think of that, Megan? Do you think that there's one person out there waiting for you, your destined soulmate?
Yeah, because like obviously it's like, what, 1 in 7.5 billion people?
Yeah.
So like, the idea is chances are you won't meet them. But if they're a soulmate, you would meet them, wouldn't you? Kind of a thing. Like, you'd like to think it. And I do definitely believe that your soulmate isn't always, like, romantic. It can definitely be platonic.
I love to believe in the idea of soulmates. I'd love to believe in the idea there's someone out there for you. But I just think humans are too varied and too different. And we change too much for that to be a possibility.
Okay. And, yeah, that's funny because I have always really believed in soulmates. Like, it's such a, maybe it's more of a comfort thing for me, but I 100% believe in like what's meant to be will be, and that you have someone 100% destined for you, and no matter what, your paths will cross. And I think everything that you know has happened in your life, and you know what family you're brought into, and all this is all kind of destined for you to find your soulmate. I'm such a hopeless romantic. It's so
bad. No, I'm like the same.
I would love to believe in the idea of soulmates, and I love that there's someone out there for me. I love for that to be true, honestly.
I find so much comfort in the fact that I in my mind I know that I will eventually cross paths with my soulmate. Like for me it's a comfort thing. It's like I don't need to stress, because if this person comes in my life, comes out of my life, I know that what's meant to find me will.
And it's also nice to put like trust in something outside yourself to be like, did I make the wrong decision, or just was it absolutely. It just wasn't meant to be, kind of a thing.
And that completely leads on to our next point. Do things happen for a reason? Like I 100% believe that things happen for a reason. I think everything is not necessarily like written out for us already. I think we control aspects of it, and how much, you know, positivity we're willing to kind of bring into the world and that type of thing, and if we attract positive things or negative things. What do you think, Aaron?
I think things do happen for a reason when it comes to outside of our control. Things like our environment when we're younger, things like how we're raised. But I think as we get further into life, as we gain more independence and more control, I think things stop happening less for a reason, and that we gain more control of our destiny in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I believe that everything happens for a reason, but I like to sometimes just set things aside and be like, you know what, if it happens, it happens.
Yeah.
I kind of put that attitude to a lot of things.
I agree. And like, even we were talking about, you know, I 100% agree with that, but then you come down to the thing of when horrific things happen and awful things happen, like are they meant to happen, you know, for our benefit at the end of the day, to teach us something? Or, you know, I always think, you know, if like someone loses a child or something like that, just horrific things happen, that, you know, is it to teach us something, or is it just horrific and is it just a freak accident?
But if you look at the likes of 9/11, the world completely changed after that. We got much safer. We were much more stringent on air travel and immigration.
Yeah.
I'd like to think things, especially like that, terrible, awful things that happen to the world, are meant to happen for a reason.
Yeah, it's awful. It's horrific to process, isn't it, that happened at the cost of people's lives.
Yeah. I don't know if you can justify the idea of, you know, the world being taught a lesson to just sacrifice innocent people.
Mm.
Yeah, I know, I agree. The last thing we talked about was kind of the whole thing of manifestation, and do we believe that, you know, by what we put out to the world, do we then attract things back? Megan, what do you think?
I don't really know what I think about that personally.
Yeah.
It's kind of just one of those things where, like, some people it seems to be effective for, some people don't seem to care and they seem to be fine. So I think it really is whatever floats your boat.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Kieran?
Well, I think it comes back to the idea of controlling your destiny.
Yes.
That you control the things that happen to you.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, it's, I 100% believe in that, as well as believing in that things happen for a reason. I 100% agree that you kind of, you do at points control your own destiny.
All right, anyway, I think we've kind of run out of time, so we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks for listening, and you've been a great crowd.
Hello and welcome to the Semple Carrick podcast. I'm Elliot and I'm here with Mark and Daniel, and today we're going to be talking about F1.
So Elliot, what do you know about Formula 1?
I know some of the drivers, and I know it's multiple races across the globe. That's pretty much all I know about it.
Daniel, do you know anything?
I don't know much. I know it's like the Grand Prix. I just like, you know, like, what does it mean in English?
I think it means great prize. It's French, obviously.
Yeah.
Because racing is, it's quite French. Even though there's only, French Formula One drivers aren't that successful anymore.
Yeah, and...
it means great prize, I think.
Yeah, and, like, how many races are there in the Grand Prix in, like, a season?
Well, in like, 1950, when Formula One first started... when the World Championship started, actually, in Silverstone and Brennan, there was only about 7 or 8 races. And nowadays, there's, 21. Next season, there could be 23, I think.
All right.
So, like, a season starts in March and it ends December-ish. So, they're hoping to fit 23 races into that space, including, like, a summer break and all for the drivers.
All right. And which countries host the Grand Prix?
Well, usually it starts off Australia, but because of COVID, it started in Bahrain. And so it usually goes around Europe and then finishes off, the season in the Middle East. And so it always goes to USA, then maybe Mexico and Brazil. And at the end of the season, it's like Abu Dhabi, Qatar, and like Saudi Arabia. So you could just see the money in the sport.
Yeah.
How many drivers are in an F1 team?
So there's 2 drivers, you know, driving every race, and then there's an extra driver in case someone gets sick. A reserve driver, that's what it's called. Last season that was very frequent that the reserve driver would drive because one of the drivers would get COVID.
Yeah, so if there's like 3 drivers, one being a reserve, how many cars would each F1 team have?
Honestly, I don't know, but I presume 2 cars, one for each driver. And then, but they could have old cars just to test out.
Would you know how fast a Formula 1 car would go? Or is that like something you wouldn't know?
Well, Formula 1 cars can accelerate from 0 to 100 miles per hour, or 160 kilometers an hour, and then decelerate back to 0 in less than about 5 seconds. Oh. So, like, the engine, if you ever go to a Formula 1 race, the engine just sounds amazing. So yeah, that's how fast a Formula One car can go. Pretty impressive.
What's the minimum distance of a Grand Prix for a race?
All the races have a near identical distance. The rules of in Formula One racing determine the minimum total distance of a Grand Prix race. It includes a predefined number of laps needed to exceed 305 kilometers. But the only exception is Monaco. And I think Spa-Francorchamps is also too long in Belgium. But that's such a historic race, similar to Monaco, that they just, because the fans love it as well, so they just keep in the calendar. And obviously Monaco, it's historic. Like, races have been there since 1920s.
Like, what are, like, the rules that go into a race? Like, if you were to...
I don't know. There's, like, obviously, like... well, you know, like, there's the basic ones. Like, obviously, you have to overtake cars on a track. That's pretty obvious. There's other ones as well. My brain has just gone dumb.
All right.
How do they win?
Like, how would you win?
Well, I don't know. Like, you just got to cross the checkered flag first at the end of the race.
Okay.
You get 25 championship points for winning a race. I think it's 18 for second, 15 for third. Fourth is 12. Fifth is 10 points. So sixth is 8 points. Seventh is 6 points. Eighth is 4 points and... ninth is 2 and 10th is 1 point, and also fastest lap of the race gets you 1 point.
All right, and I did look up something before we came in here. I looked up how much parts of the like F1 cars cost. Is it true that the engine in an F1 car is probably the most expensive part of it?
Yeah, definitely. Like, if they change any components in a F1 car, they have to take a grid penalty in the next race. Like, that's how serious it is. That's how much kind of the influence of the how new the engine is puts on the race. So the newer the engine, basically, the better it is. They're only allowed to change certain engines maybe 3 or 4 times, certain components 3 or 4 times in a season.
So, like, you said something like grid penalty. Is that sort of like a handicap in golf where, like, the older you are, the less, the more you get taken off, or, like, something like that? Is it like the newer the engine, the more time gets added or something like that, so it's more even?
Well, it's more like so once, if you take a grid penalty, so if you put in new components after parc fermé, which is whenever after qualifying, if you change anything about the engine at all, you take, is it depending on the, how big the component is, it could be a 3-place or a 5-place or even a 10-place grid penalty. So with 21 races this year, it's very hard to have components last so long, like 7 races. It's pretty intense.
And I heard from whenever I've watched it, like with my dad or my brother, I've always seen like and on Instagram as well, I've always seen like accidents and stuff happen where like cars go up in flames, and the drivers would either walk out or people would be immediately sent over to like put them out. Like, is it a high chance that if the car gets knocked over, it's going to light on fire or explode? Or is just one of the risks that comes with driving?
I know what crash you're talking about. Grosjean and Sakhir in Bahrain in 2020. If you don't know, the car lit in flames. He's known as the man who walked out of fire because that's literally what he did. But yeah, that isn't supposed to happen. The FIA, the Formula, or the Federation International Automobile, it's in Italian, but I'm not going to pronounce that part, I'd just butcher it. They really make sure that that doesn't happen again. It's not supposed to happen. I think just the chassis or something just broke apart and the engine was exposed and just blew up.
I've over the years of my dad and my brother are avid fans of it, but over the years I've just seen like different events and stuff happen. Like, I know there's been a lot of crashes which people weren't so lucky to walk out of, or there's been crashes that leave the car wrecked. But is that like, does the F FIA?
Or yeah, whatever, that's it, yeah.
Does it just make sure, like, to make the cars to have the most chance of them being, like, safe, or?
Yeah, that, like, safety is the most important thing, but it's also having fair racing. The FIA, during a race, they always make sure that overtakes are fair and that you're not, you know, squeezing someone off the track. No?
And something else with the FIA, is the FIA the reason on like rainy days or whatever if there's a safety car like slowing down?
Yeah, so sometimes aquaplaning occurs where the car just, where the water gets into kind of the brakes and the car, like you can't stop it and you just go straight into a barrier. The FIA would just stop a race or bring out the safety car to see if the cars can just get the water off the track.
Is the safety car's purpose just to, like, just to manage the speed they go or just to, like, make sure that it's safe enough to drive?
Yeah, so after a crash, they would bring out a safety car just so the marshals on the track can just clean it up. Because there have been times where this French driver in 2014... died in the Japanese Grand Prix because he hit a kind of tow truck type thing that was bringing out another F1 car into safety. So, you know, cars won't hit it. But the Formula One car actually hit the tow truck and he unfortunately passed away.
Well, that's unfortunate. I don't really have any more questions. Do you have anything more to say?
Well, I'd just like to say that, like, also, like, there's a Netflix series called Drive to Survive, and that's for a lot of fans into the sport. Like, in primary school, I only knew one guy that watched it, but now I'd say loads of people watch it.
Daniel, do you have any more questions?
No, none.
Okay, well, as we don't have any more questions, and that's really your final point to say, I'll just say thank you for listening, and this has been the Temple Carrick Podcast.
Thanks.